Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and here in the Pacific Northwest, we have got absolutely spectacular weather. Of course, you better have on the warm clothes because it's down in the 30s. But we're nice and warm and cozy at this broadcasting table, and I'm so delighted that you're able to join me. We're going to be talking about a subject that is a little bit unique. It's something that most people, if they would want to discuss it, probably would do it in the privacy of their home or someplace where they wouldn't have people overhearing them. However, my guest, Joanne DiMaggio, is not shy about it at all. And what am I discussing? I am discussing soul writing. That's right. She's put out a book called Your Soul Remembers, Accessing Past Lives Through Soul Writing. I'd like to welcome my guest, Joanne DiMaggio, to the show. Welcome, Joanne.
Thank you, Don. I'm glad to be here.
Now, you are a teacher, and you're also a member of an organization I'd never heard about. It's the International Association for Regression Research in Therapy, and you yourself, as a professional, have been deeply involved in this research for well over 25 years. And you ran your own past life research centers outside of Chicago, and then you're now in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Right.
You have a master's in transpersonal studies.
Right.
Joanne, this, again, is a subject matter most people are not going to want to talk about in public. Of course, we are. But it touches on a nerve with a lot of individuals. It's almost as if when you talk about past lives, regression, they say, okay, here's the woo-woo stick. We'll wave it over you, and then that's it. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it, what was it in your experience that made this something that was a reality for you and that you said there's more to regression and past life experiences than what meets the average person's eye? What was it that woke you up to this reality?
Well, I always was interested in this topic from the time I was a teenager. I read a lot about Edgar Cayce and about books that Jess Stern and Ruth Montgomery had written. I was brought up Catholic, went to Catholic school for 12 years. And just did not have the answers that I was looking for. It just, things just didn't make any sense to me. We only get this one chance. This is it. If we screw up, we go directly to hell. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. That's the end. The whole theory about reincarnation answered a lot of my questions. It created a more just universe, a loving God. It made sense to me that your soul would have an opportunity to experience life in the physical sense over multiple lifetimes. And as I studied and read and looked into what other religions were believing, saw that reincarnation actually had been in the Bible until the 5th century, at the Council of Nicaea when it was taken out, I just became fascinated with it. I had some experiences as a child that what I call now was some bleed through from an 18th century lifetime, but I didn't know it back then. There was just a lot of clues, a lot of patterns, and as I grew older and I studied, I became passionate about it because I saw that it really answered a lot of questions that people had. It just absolutely made sense to me. And in looking at the ability of it to heal people from all sorts of issues that are unresolved, that they don't understand where did this come from. It just was a very powerful tool for transformation. So that combined with my stumbling on how to do soul writing gave me the idea a few years ago to do a research project combining the two, and that's what resulted in the new book.
I want to step back a little bit, relating to some of the comments that you made.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you actually studied how to be a past life therapist, and I know from my own personal experiences that this is very real. I do not mock or laugh at this. And I know that it can be transformational. It can often enable people to move past what may have been barriers because of what I call the soul cellular memory that they're carrying forward. And you started working as a therapist. Now, when you started working as a past life therapist, first I'd like to ask the question, is there an accreditation that is given? Are there classes people can take if this is something they wanted to pursue? Are there classes they can take to be accredited?
Right. Most people start with becoming a certified hypnotherapist, and so they get their experience in hypnosis, working in altered states with people. I specialize in the past life end of it. For instance, I don't do a smoking cessation or weight loss or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just strictly do the regression therapy. And in the course of the years that I've been doing this, when I started my past life research organization, the reason I started it was because I wanted to make sure that it was viewed as a very professional modality. I don't ever use it for entertainment purposes. And really wanted to surround myself with some of the people on the cutting edge of this work, people like Brian Weiss and others that have really brought to the forefront the credibility of this simply because of who they are in their work. So to me, it's very sacred work, and it's just a highly professional modality for me and for others to follow. There are certification courses. The ARE, for instance, just had one last week. The ARE is the Association for Research and Enlightenment. It's the Edgar Cayce organization in Virginia Beach. But there are other associations that sponsor occasional certification workshop classes that give people that degree in that.
Soul writing, when I was going through your book, reminds me a great deal of automatic writing. It's a detachment process so that you can become more aware of yourself. But tell us how you discovered this and why you put the term soul writing to it.
When I was starting to do my research for my thesis as a student at Atlantic University, because I was a writer by profession, my background's in advertising, public relations, and marketing. So I was working in the Chicago media market for many years, doing brochures and more commercial type of writing.
Mm-hmm.
When I studied at Atlantic University, they had a really wonderful creative writing track, and I decided that I would do my thesis on inspirational writing, which is the term that Edgar Cayce used. So I went into the Edgar Cayce readings. Cayce, for your listeners who may not know, is one of the most renowned psychics of the 20th century. He's considered the father of holistic medicine. He had a lot of writers coming to him asking him about automatic versus inspirational writing, and he told them what the difference was between the two, because there is a difference between them. And as I read his work on it and studied some other work on it, then I went to Amazon, just typed in inspirational writing, and I was surprised that what came up were all books in the Christian genre. When I typed in automatic writing, it said all books that were more of the occult nature. So I knew that neither one of those fit the criteria that Cayce had outlined, nor what I was doing. So I really meditated on that for a while to come up with another term that I felt more accurately described what it is. And I came up with soul writing, because the writing is coming. It's emanating from a higher source. Whether you believe that's God, your angels, your guides, or your higher self, coming from a higher source, coming through you, through your soul, and then out your hand onto the paper. So it's a written form of meditation. That's probably the easiest way to describe it to somebody who doesn't know what it is.
What was the most profound experience that you had when you started pulling all of this together into a usable format?
With the soul writing?
Mm-hmm.
I guess the most profound experience I had was that I was finding that I was getting answers to questions that I could not get in a conscious state. And I sort of stumbled on this when I was a child, when I was like 9 years old. I was wanted to come up with a secret code that my parents wouldn't understand. And so being raised a good Catholic child, I was able to pray. I got in a quiet place. I prayed. I said, "Come, please send me this the secret code," and fully expected I would get something on paper. So I just kind of sat there with a pen and a pad of paper, and I started getting these little crazy-looking stick figures. Well, 25 years later, I was in a calligraphy class, and they were describing the origin of handwriting, and she pulls down this chart, and there are my little stick figures, and she said, "This is the Phoenician alphabet, which dated to 1000 BC. So somehow, as a 9-year-old, I was pulling in from the collective consciousness or wherever. I just said the prayer, "Give me the secret code," and here come these little figures. So that really was a little bit of a shock to me. And then later on, I was listening to a subliminal writer's tape to help me make the switch from doing the commercial writing to doing more feature articles, and I thought, I need some help with really tapping into a deeper sense, going a little bit deeper into the well for more profound writing. And I was listening to this, it's called Start Writing Now. It was a subliminal writer's tape that Dick Sutphin had. And I started writing what appeared to be diary entries from the 18th century. And that really shocked me because I don't write like that. It sounded like a historic romance novel. And I thought, what in the world is this? So those incidences in my life led me to, many years later, put two and two together to think that I must be tapping into something beyond my conscious state in coming up with what I'm coming up with here in writing. So that was, for me, a real eye-opener. And as I've taught it and as I've included it in my regression work, it has been a tremendous eye-opener and a real aha moment for the people that have worked with me, too.
You have a number of stories in your book, Your Soul Remembers, mm-hmm. about various individuals and their experiences, and one is about a woman by the name of Carolyn. She's 64 years young. She's an office manager. She works part-time as a minister. And she came to you. Now, why did she come to you first? That would be my question. What was it that motivated her to link up with your class? There had to be something that was piquing her curiosity.
Well, she was one of 50 people that volunteered for my project. I wanted to do a research project. I knew that I could get past life information through soul writing. I wanted to prove that anybody could do it, that it wasn't just me, that mm-hmm. it wasn't a talent that only I had. I wanted to show that others could do it because I wanted to show them that all answers lie within. And you could tap into any information from any lifetime yourself. You don't really need a past life therapist. So I was sort of putting myself out of business by doing that. So I put the word out through my Unity Church here in Charlottesville, through my ARE friends, that I was looking for volunteers who wanted to explore this with me. And so I had 50 people, 43 men and 7 women, no, 43 women and 7 men, who volunteered for the project, and Carolyn was one of those people. They all, you know, they all had really fascinating stories, and I
mm-hmm.
could only use 25 of the 50 in this particular book, and hers is one of them.
Now, her experience took her back to the 14th century, and she saw herself as a male. Now, this is something that I know that I've had experiences with in my conversations with people through the years.
Mm-hmm.
This is not unusual, the reversal of the roles. Every once in a while, there was someone to be the more predominant, but it seems like we usually switch genders because that allows us to grow and develop in different ways. And this is 1321 A.D. She
mm-hmm.
was able to put that time frame together. Talk to us about what she experienced, because this was quite detailed.
Okay, I'm going to have to remember because, like I said, I did 50 of them, and I don't know that I remember hers specifically.
Okay, Orzo was the persona that she had in that past life.
Right.
And this was someone that, and this intrigued me because there's always a question asked, what is the value of this life experience?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently as he was dying, and he lived basically in Italy, he lived in a mud hut.
He was imprisoned. Is that the regression we're talking
about?
Well,
no, he wasn't in prison. He was a prison of his own making.
Mm-hmm.
He never stepped outside of certain boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same thing, as she said, day in and day out. And her words were, it was a disconnected, remote life.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that when she looked at this, this is part of what you like to have people become aware of, is to ask what it is they gained from that past life experience and its relevancy to the one they're living at this time. And she said that limitations and strictness that she places on herself now,
mm-hmm.
she doesn't want to go out with regret,
mm-hmm.
and she edited herself to that extent. So she became aware that she really was shortchanging herself.
Right.
As
exactly.
a carryover.
Right, and that's the common theme, I think, through all of the sessions, these realizations of the pattern that's repeating itself. And oftentimes the pattern isn't really doesn't come forth through the actual regression. It comes forward through the soul writing end of it. And then they get insight actually after that. I had her soul writing, and then she had her interpretation of that life through that writing. And then my soul writing was also done at the same time so that I could give her some additional insight. But she had a pretty accurate vision of Orzo from what I remember, and what his life, that he lived in this mud hut and there was dim lighting in it. Because I was asking all those questions to try to get a lot of detail. And when I asked about if there was a significant event in his life that's impacting her now, and that's one of the key questions. And she talked about him being alone and didn't know if it was his choice or if he had been banished. And so that sense of separation was also something that she was clearly could see in her current life. And the issue that you brought up earlier about switching sexes is very true. One interesting thing I found out in my research project was that the women had no problems being men in a previous life. The men, however, had a big problem being a woman. When they saw a previous lifetime in which they were a woman, there was tremendous resistance on their part. Some of them even said, I don't want to see this. I don't want to be a woman. I think it was the sense of being in a female body and not feeling that sense of powerlessness,
mm-hmm.
that I think that it came as a shock to them.
Mm-hmm.
One in particular, Boyan, he was the most resistant. He really did not want to be a woman. But later when he did his soul writing, he said, I've discovered that inside we're both the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he said, all my life I've had this like superiority attitude toward women, you know. But then when he actually was a woman, his attitude changed very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That sort of goes back to the old adage, walk a mile in somebody else's shoes.
Exactly.
Or
right.
You make judgments because you don't know what somebody else has gone through. Now, you had a woman, a 57-year-old Sandra, who is a grant evaluator, and she said she wasn't sure because she went into her session, and again, this was part of your research, but she felt when she went into the session, she might have had a preconceived idea about what she was expecting to experience, but she got two different time frames. One was 1632, the other one was 1639,
mm-hmm.
and she said she wasn't sure what that time frame meant. And all of a sudden, it was like somebody had illuminated the 1639. And
right.
She described herself, the family she had, and then the fact that she was living in an era when the plague had hit,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and the big pyres of bodies being burned,
right,
and
right.
this type of thing. 60 to 80% of all people were dying from
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And she, that obviously was a very emotional experience for
right.
her.
Right.
And she said, I really didn't have a bad life. I was very sad because I'd lost everybody I'd love. I'd seen so much trauma. But she said she was very much involved in that life experience with helping others. And in mm-hmm. this life experience today, she does that as well.
Right.
And she talks about how in this life experience, when she met her husband, she felt like she had known him from someplace before.
Right.
And I think all of us have that feeling about someone, whether it's a person that we become intimate with, or maybe it is a friend, a stranger. You just know that person. You know
right.
them. There's
right.
just this awareness, and they may or may not play a big part in your life, but you know them. You recognize them. And that is something I find so very, very intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And all the different roles that can be played, which I find even more interesting.
Right. That's one of the questions I ask at the end of the regression. Are there any people from that lifetime that you just witnessed? Are any of them in your current life? They're not necessarily going to look the same, but you'll have a sense of them. You'll have this feeling. And she said that she felt that her husband from that lifetime was now her good friend, John. And there's a lot more to that story, because after this session, she kept updating me. And she's actually one of the wonderful examples of soulmates. And soulmates, by the way, could be people that are not necessarily a romantic attachment. They can
right.
Soulmates are simply souls that have been with you before. But another one who had a similar experience was Vivian, who remembered being Albert Wilcox in South Dakota in the Old West, and had Albert's wife, Rebecca, is now Vivian's husband, Dennis. So that's one of the questions I ask about, you know, who are these people now, and what role are they playing? Because as a soul group, they agreed to come back together.
Mm-hmm.
To assist each other in whatever issues they're working on in the here and now. And it doesn't have to be an issue from the immediate previous lifetime. It could be, like in the case of Frank, who remembered being Cleo in Pompeii. That symptom waited 2,000 years before that issue came up for him to resolve. And his was the case of spontaneous healing, where he discovered that his asthma in this life was a karmic, hereditary condition from the Pompeii life. And his was the first case of spontaneous healing that I had ever experienced. I had read about it, that other therapists had come across this, but I had never experienced it. So that happens as well. When you uncover the root cause of something that you're dealing with now, and you understand where it came from, what it's all about, it often disappears on its own. So that certainly was the case for Frank.
In your book, you have, just as you've mentioned, the process for soul writing that you
mm-hmm.
recommend.
Mm-hmm.
You have your step-by-step process that if someone just follows it, it could be very interesting. And it brings to mind something that Napoleon Hill wrote about in his book, Think and Grow Rich, and this was done in the early 1900s, and he wrote about a man that he had met that solved problems for people, big problems, around the world, big
mm-hmm.
business individuals. And the man had designed a room where he would go in and he would sit at a table, have a pad of paper and a pen, and he'd sit at the table, and there was a little switch that was put on that table. Nothing else was in the room but the table, the chair, the pad of paper, and the pen, and a switch for the light. Switch the light off, and he would focus on the problem, and then he would get solutions. Now, that I call automatic writing. Mm-hmm. But it is, in a way, similar, where you allow yourself to be a vehicle of information that comes in from what we would say is the invisible. That's the only way, the word I'm looking at right now. And allow yourself to receive information about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something you can do at a computer. You can do it with a pad of paper and a pen. And just like this gentleman that Napoleon Hill was interviewing and studying, the man got answers. He said, this is something that's beyond me, but yet he was able to translate that into problem solving for other individuals.
Right.
And made his living doing it that way.
Right. And as I mentioned in my first book, Soul Writing, Conversing with Your Higher Self, I have a whole chapter about famous writers and composers who use the exact same process. Because when someone asked Mozart, you know, where did this music come from? He said, from whence and where, I don't know. I don't know where it came from. And there are many, many writers who say that it's like for them, it's like a form of rapid inner dictation, where, they're dreaming. Beethoven said that it would come to him when he was in the carriage ride. Some other writers would be walking, and all of a sudden, here's this information pouring into their mind, and they can't wait to get home and write it down. A lot of them had really fascinating descriptions of the actual process, and it's a process that anybody in the creative arts uses, because basically, I give 12 different steps to take when you're first starting out, in essence, there's just three main steps, which is finding a very quiet place that you can relax and just do some deep breathing relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
People who meditate, getting into that meditative state. Surround yourself with white light. Say a prayer of protection always. I always include that. And then put the pen to paper. Just put your intent out there. Ask the question. Ask the tough questions that you want answers. You know, what is the source of the discontent between myself and my sister, or something? Why is it that I continually have this financial problem? And then you're putting it out there, and then you simply wait, and an answer will come, and it'll come in a way that'll be completely different than how you write in a conscious state. Most people are actually surprised at the tone of the soul writing, because it is a lot different than what you would write in your everyday writings. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of people say, I don't know who wrote this. And of course, that's the big question. Where is this writing coming from? Well, it's coming from you. It's coming from your soul.
Mm-hmm.
So it is something anybody can learn to do. And with practice, you'll really be pleasantly surprised at the depth of information that you'll be able to achieve.
One of the wonderful gifts, I think, of doing something like soul writing is that this is for your eyes only. It's not meant to be broadcast out to the world unless you want to broadcast it.
Right.
But it
right.
gives you insights and information that otherwise you might not ever get. And I think it's so powerful. I think it's so powerful. And your book, Your Soul Remembers, Accessing Your Past, Lives Through Soul Writing, it's not just an either-or. There are multiple levels of information and understanding that can often be conveyed. And I think, Joanne, you have done a wonderful job. For those of you listening, if you'd like to check out her website, go to soulwriter.net. And that's SOULWITER, writer.net. Joanne DiMaggio, I think you have done everyone a good service by putting out this book. It brings a lot of fascinating information through that maybe can help explain sometimes why people do have the particular challenges they do, because I don't know of anybody in this life who doesn't have them. But mm-hmm. it also gives you a tool with which to understand and how to overcome them, too.
Right.
Thank you so much for being my guest, Joanne. This is Donna Sebo, Joanne DiMaggio, her book, Your Soul Remembers. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hello, welcome back. This is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. Oh, my goodness, it is so gorgeous up here right now. Oh, it just feels perfect for Halloween, which I know is coming up. Nice, crisp, cool weather, and everything's just ablaze with color. But you can give me a call here at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about money, 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 money. Yes, that wonderful element that we so enjoy spending. Jeff Rose is going to be talking with us how we can be soldiers of finance. And he was in the military, and he used a lot of what the military training. Whoops, I gave you the wrong information. It's learning to breathe tomorrow. Yes, I was reading the wrong stuff. Learning to breathe. Sue Fries is going to be my guest. This is a story that really means a lot to me personally, because we have members of our family that went through the same devastating toxic experience that Sue had. And Sue is known as the termite lady. That's right. So we're going to be talking with the termite lady tomorrow. And then we're also going to be talking, yes, on the day of Halloween Eve, about the alien abduction files. Denise Stoner is going to be sharing her personal experience and her research information. And then, better you go home. This is a mystery that we are going to be discussing. Scott Driscoll is going to be my guest. So we've got a great lineup. Shortly, we'll have the lineup of the guests that are upcoming in the next few weeks, and that should be going up pretty soon. And when that does, you'll know who's coming on. You'll know a little bit about the authors, and you'll be able to find out even more by listening to the interview. Of course, I always enjoy having you join me at this time of the day, including having you give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. Each year, the great pumpkin rises out of the pumpkin patch that he thinks is the most sincere. He's got to pick this one. He's got to. I don't see how a pumpkin patch can be more sincere than this one. Yes, it is the quote from It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, Charles Schulz. Oh, my goodness. How many millions of lives has he touched with his fabulous, fabulous cartoon strip of Peanuts? And it's still going on, even though that he has moved on to another experience. By golly, the magic of what he gave to all of us is just incredible. And Halloween is so much fun. It is just delightful. And I wanted to share with you a Dracula dip. I love what people come up with. Dracula dip, vampire eyeballs, bat sandwiches. I mean, there is just so much fun stuff that's out there. I just think people have this phenomenal capacity. with imagination and other things. It's just great. I just delight in seeing all of the ways that we can bring something special into life. And nobody's got it all. Isn't that marvelous? It gives us something to talk about. Speaking of something to talk about, I wanted to address an issue of integrity and personal responsibility. The reason I want to share this with you is because this is by a reporter. How many times have you watched newscasts or watched reporters in action, the paparazzi, and felt just totally disgusted about how they dealt with what was in front of them? In our world today, seeing people cut up, slaughtered, it's in all the movies just about. We have a very violent portrayal that often is put out there. And I always tell people, if you don't like what you see, change the channel. You don't have to stay tuned to it. And that is the right of choice. But I do know that in many instances in media, sensationalism and getting the gore is always part of that. And I've been on both sides of media. I've been on the part where I've been involved with talking and doing what I do, as well as being interviewed and misrepresented on the other side. And I always bring up a point when people are saying, oh, I saw this and that's the truth. I'll say, how do you know that's the truth? Do you really know that that's the truth? What are the facts? It's a very difficult positioning to be in, because as people, we often are going to just be so enthralled, especially with the visual that we have today and with the technology we've got. People around the world can be sending films and putting stuff out that may represent information, but how much of the real information is often the question. Well, there was a gentleman by the name of James Tom, and he decided that he wanted to share a very personal experience about being a reporter. And he was a young police reporter. He was driving to a scene he didn't want to see, and it was really quite a tragic one. A man had accidentally backed his pickup truck over his baby granddaughter in the driveway of the family home. And it was a fatality, and this was devastating. Absolutely an awful situation to have to go to. And he saw when he came up, reporters had already gotten there ahead of him, and cameras were focused on this man. They were sticking microphones in his face. The man was beside himself. He couldn't even speak. They were right there in his face. Well, the reporters gave up on him, ended up following the police into this small home, and this elderly man was the grandfather. And he was just devastated. Well, James walked up to him, and the old man just started talking. James didn't ask anything. And he said, I didn't even know she was outdoors. There was a flower bed that he pointed to. And what the elderly man had wanted to do was move dirt that was in his truck into a positioning so he could unload it easily to put into this flower bed. Well, he said, I was well trained as a reporter. I left the gentleman, didn't say a word to him, just left him. End up going into the house following the other reporters. And he said, I had a 3x5 studio portrait of this beautiful little girl. And he went into the kitchen where the police told him the little girl's body was. And he had a camera with him. Now, at the time, as a young reporter, he was using a very bulky camera. It was called a Speed Graphic. It was the newspaper reporter's trademark. Now, for some reason, a lot of people had been there, but now they drifted out of the house. They were moving on. When he got into the kitchen, this is what he saw. There was a Formica top table. It was backlighted by a frilly curtained window, and the tiny body of this little girl was all wrapped in a clean white sheet. And sitting on a chair beside the table, in perfect profile positioning, and unaware of him, was the baby's grandfather. And his deep grief was etched all over his face. The house, quiet, no commotion. James said he could hear a clock ticking. Then, as he was watching, the grandfather leaned forward, curved his arms like parentheses around the little form, and pressed his face to the shroud and didn't move. He said it was a split second in time. He took advantage of it. He adjusted his lens. It took him just that split second to do all of this, put the bulb in the flash gun, raise the camera. Boom. Took the picture. He said every element of that picture was perfect. Grandfather in his plain work clothes, his white hair, just illuminated by sunshine. Little girl's form wrapped in the white sheet. The atmosphere of a simple home and the backdrop of the components in the kitchen on the wall. He said police could be seen outside the window. Also framed in that, through that window, were two grief-stricken parents. Now, he made a decision. He knew in that split second, he could take that photo, boom, it would be there, be captured for all time. But he didn't shoot it. He could not move. He said, I couldn't intrude on this poor man's island of grief. And he said, eventually I lowered my camera and crept away. He said, I thought, oh, gee, you're a failure as a journalist. Now, he never told anybody around him how he deliberately missed a powerful opportunity for a perfect news picture. But he said every day, as a professional, we'll see on the newscasts and in the papers, we'll see pictures of people in extreme conditions of grief and despair. He said, it seems like, to me, human suffering has become a spectator sport. And he said, when I'm seeing this in media, that day looms very strong in my mind. To this day, he said, I still feel right about what I did. Powerful statement about integrity, respect, and personal responsibility for James. A man who really understood reporting, but James Tom said, there are just some things you just don't do. It's a moment of conscience, isn't it? And I think so many of us do that. So many of us will make choices in a moment that, for us, are very sacred spaces, and we need to honor and respect that. I think that this is something we need to pass along to. There's a wonderful movie that was done with Paul Newman. Yes, oh, those blue eyes of his, captivating. But Paul Newman and Sally Fields played in a movie called The Absence of Malice. And if you've never seen it, it is a powerful, powerful film. Get out, you know, check it out of your library or whatever. Which, by the way, I want to tell you, libraries are awesome for material and videos. Oh, my goodness. It's just phenomenal what your local library has. So be sure you check it out. You may learn a lot about cultures, people, traditions, history of one type or another. It's great stuff. So use your public library. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. Hey, you're welcome to call in at 888-627-6008. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. 888-627-6008 is the number to call into. Okay, I wanted to share two fun concepts. These are not mine, they are from some other people that are just absolutely fabulous. If you're like a very good friend of mine who absolutely adores Halloween, and she wants to always have something wild and whimsical and weird, it's more fun to walk into her house. She has hanging spider webs when you go in. It's always a big party. It's so much fun. Well, lots of times we want something that's wild and wacky, and kids really enjoy this. But this, I think, would suit the taste buds of adults much better than it would kids. But you could adjust this recipe for youngsters in any way that you want. But it's called the Dracula Dip. Not drip, but the Dracula Dip. And this is a Dracula's coffin, and it's made from a toasted loaf of bread, and I'm going to give you information on that, and also a chili cheese dip that goes inside of it. But this is really cute. I thought it was adorable. You get a loaf of bread, and you need one that's about 9 by 5, and you can go and check your local markets. You could actually make a bunch of little coffins if you wanted to with smaller rolls, if depending on how you want to do the party. But just remember, you are going to need to have, for this particular suggestion, you want to make sure that your ends for the coffin are about 2.5 inches wide. So just, you know, a good standard, what do I want to say, oval type or square end type of a roll, and you can get those at the store. They're not expensive at all. Now, what you want to do is horizontally trim the top of the bread, because that's going to be the top of the coffin. And you want to cut out the center of the loaf, and you want to leave a 1-inch thick shell on the bottom. And what you're going to do, and you can do a number of these, what you're going to do is take 2 egg yolks with 1/8 teaspoon of brown concentrated food coloring, and you want to brush the mixture over your bread, and you want to put the bread, again, it's all scooped out, on an ungreased baking sheet. You bake it 5 to 7 minutes until the color is set and dry. Now, for Dracula's face, you want a 2-inch round cookie cutter. You want to cut the round from a 1-wide slice of mozzarella cheese, and you can take a little paintbrush and draw eyes and mouth and hair on that round piece of cheese, you know, making Dracula as interesting as you want to make him. And then when the cheese trimmings left from what you have cut out, you take 2 small triangles, you make them for the fangs, and you can paint them with black food coloring, attach it to the mouth, and then for your cape, you want to have 1 large roasted pepper from a jar, and you want to pat it dry, and you want to make it into a large triangle, and you drape it over one end of your coffin, which, of course, is going to be filled with dip. And you can roll the collar pieces and place them on the edge of the coffin. You know, you roll them out of the cheese and top with the face, and then cut a slit in the heart in place on the filling and insert a pretzel dipping stick through the heart. Ah, yes. You can, I mean, your imagination can just go wild with this. Now, this is the Dracula dip. And like I said, it's more for adults than it is for kids. You're going to need a jar, 15-ounce jar of salsa con queso. And you're going to need 8 ounces of ground beef, or if you want to use shredded beef, you could do that too. And you need one small onion, about one and a half teaspoons of chili powder, 1/2 cup of salsa, 1 can of chopped green chilies drained, 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh cilantro, and 1 bread coffin. Now, again, you can use rolls for the coffins if you wanted to make a number of them. Individual portions, you just size it down, or you can have a big one if you want, where you, you know, have more than one, whatever you want to do. Now, the dip, you want to reserve 1/3 cup of the salsa con queso, and you want to heat the large skillet over medium-high heat. Put in your beef and your onion, cook until it's broken up. You want it well browned and cooked through. It's going to take about 5 minutes. Then you stir in the chili powder, cook it a minute, reduce heat to medium, stir in the salsa, chili, cilantro, and remaining salsa con queso, and heat it through. Transfer to a bowl or right into the bread coffin. And you can take whatever is left on the side there, heat it up, spread it over the dip if you like. And if you're using the coffin, you can decorate it after you fill it and serve warm with chips. Or actually, if you have any pieces of, you know, bread, anything that makes for good dipping, vegetables would be good for this dipping too. But it's a fun idea. It's wild, it's wacky, it's flavorful. And again, if you wanted to do this for kids, all you'd have to do is create a dip that they like that is just going to be perfect. But I can see where that could be such a hit for people when you bring it out. It is just absolutely wonderful. I mean, I've even got a recipe for Transylvanian garlicky fettuccine. Yeah, I know. That's really stretching it. But that's okay. Vampire eyeballs. I guess we could cover that one, too. This is Donna Sebo, and I just wanted to share a thought with you before we say goodbye. And that thought is the key to living life with fullness is taking a risk. And there are so many people that will talk about that, and Elmore Leonard, who is an author and screenwriter, said, I'd reached a point where I finally could write novels full-time with enough in the bank that my family could get by for 6 months. I didn't have to get up early in the morning. However, guess what? Life happened, and all of what I thought was so secure ended up going away. And he said he wrote history and geography for Encyclopedia Britannica films, and he wanted to get back to writing a novel. And he said, you know what? I got to get busy. He decided to invest a lot of time in writing his novel, and the risk paid off. The book even sold as a movie. And he said it allowed him to write as a full-time occupation and make it a very good living, taking a risk. Remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There is a magic inside of you. Maybe you want to do soul writing to find out more about yourself. Maybe you need to just make it okay that who you are can make a tremendous difference. And who you are is significant. We need you. And I'm so glad that you've been able to take time out of your busy schedule to join me at this broadcasting table. Donna Sebo here. Won't you join me tomorrow? We're going to be talking about the termite lady. I think you might enjoy it. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.